Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington, your home sold guaranteed realty. Find out how much your home is worth instantly at LaughlinWolfingtonRealty.com.
When we sent the text on Friday to our international affairs expert, Jim Settley from Yumin School of Policy and International Affairs, it appeared there could be a plan to see an end of the conflict in Iran. 3 days later, it really looks like there could be something for people to sign in Switzerland this Friday. Making the most of our time with Captain Settley, what do you make of this? Could this be the end of the conflict in Iran?
Hey, good morning, Rick. Yeah, it could be the end. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. There's a lot of discussion still to be had. There's a lot of negotiation to still come forth, especially with respects to Iran's nuclear ambitions and their fissile material and so on. But this is further along at any time during this 100-day-plus war that they have been to ending this conflict, especially with the impression that the president very much wants to end this conflict and Iranian government leadership wants to end this conflict. So I'm cautiously optimistic that this memorandum of understanding, and thank you for not calling it a peace deal because that's not where they are yet, but this memorandum of understanding is going to lead to some more intense negotiation. It's going to open the Straits of Hormuz. It's going to remove the Navy blockade, which is pretty easy to put back in place if it goes south, but there's always a chance it could go south. But there's a lot of hurdles to go through. There's a lot of steps for this to come to fruition. So this signing on Friday is a big piece. And then 60 days after that, we'll see how the negotiations go for the nuclear removal of nuclear fissile material and declining or denying Iran's ambitions to ever have a nuclear weapon.
Well, we have 441 reasons to hope it works, and that's the 441 kilograms of enriched uranium. But we've been here before, haven't we? We've received some assurances in the past from Iran that, yeah, we'll set it aside. We're not going to do anything. And here we are again.
Yeah, we have received assurances in the past, and you know they've gone back on their word, they've gone back on their oaths, or whatever agreements that we've had in the past. And you know, it's interesting to hear the president and others, not just the president, say that this will forever end Iran's ability to have a nuclear weapon, and that no one can predict that. That's not the case. You know, we've seen that in the past. And they continue, there are hardliners in Iran that continue to try to get a nuclear weapon, to obtain a nuclear weapon in some capacity. So that desire is always going to be there. We're hopefully going to remove any capability to do it in the near term, and then maybe medium, you know, hopefully long term. But they're always going to want to get that weapon. But for now, that discussion in the next 60 days is going to determine whether that fissile material is removed from the country, whether it's destroyed in the country, whether they're allowed to enrich anything. We don't have any details on that aspect of the agreement, which is, like I said, going to be discussed over the next 60 days. But it's going to be really, really tentative, and people will be watching closely. There's a lot of hope. You know, that's not a good strategy, right? But it's all we have on this one right now.
If we could remove it, if we could seize it, Israel would have a new position from which to prevent, in some way, Iran ever requiring it again?
Yes and no. We've always had that capacity to deny their capability militarily. We've always had the capacity to bomb the sites to somehow destroy them. We've seen Israel go in with their spies and with the Mossad and take out a lot of their nuclear engineers and nuclear scientists. So we've always had that capacity. We haven't exercised it full, or Israel perhaps hasn't exercised it to its fullest degree. They're trying to do that now. You've hit upon one of the significant barriers to this coming to real solid fruition, and that is Israel is not a signee on this agreement. Neither is Hezbollah, and it hinges very much on Israel and Hezbollah in their potential for conflict. So Israel will always want to maintain that capacity to go ahead and absolutely destroy or devastate any ability to ever have a nuclear weapon. Should Iran decide to do that 5, 10, 15 years from now, Israel's going to maintain that capacity. We might be here again in that time frame. Let's hope not.
We're talking with Jim Settley from Humane School of Policy and International Affairs. Did hope to dovetail into that, and maybe we could dig a little deeper. Key mediator Pakistan says both sides, Iran and the United States, are agreeing to immediate and permanent termination of military operations on all fronts, including Lebanon. I just wonder, can America and Iran really tell Lebanon and Israel what to do?
We can, but they don't have to listen.
Yep.
And that's the problem. That's the problem right now. Netanyahu, you know, we talk about the midterms in this country and how this is, formulates a bit of where President Trump is trying to come from with respect to the deal. Israel also has elections at the end of October. So Netanyahu's looking at his own country and his own ability. You know, there's a lot of fear in his camp and from him himself that if he is not elected, he's going to prison. And so he is doing what he can or what he thinks he can. So he's watching this closely. Again, he's not a signee to this. They're not going to back down from Hezbollah. Hezbollah's not signing this, and they're going to continue to attack. So it'll be interesting, probably the biggest barrier, but it'll be interesting to watch over this next week what happens between Israel and Lebanon, i.e. Hezbollah, and if that is going to be a showstopper for the agreement moving forward. That's always going to be an issue, and I don't know how the U.S. gets Israel on board with respects to not attacking Hezbollah, and how the heck you tell a terrorist organization not to fire missiles into Israel. You can, but they're not going to listen. So that is going to be the key factor in whether this is successful or not in the near term.
There's 300 billion reasons for someone to think that President Trump will not go for this. At least that's some of the sentiment that we're seeing from listeners this morning. And that is the reported $300 billion that the United States is prepared to pay to Iran for their reconstruction. We win a war and then we have to give the loser $300 billion?
Yeah, you know, it's. I did a little bit of looking into last night the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that was signed in 2015 under the Obama administration, and where we are with this deal. And I'm guessing you wouldn't be surprised, listeners wouldn't be surprised, as much as they want to believe, they are not that different. And so, of course, we're going to see how this pans out. There's still some more time to see how this unfolds, whether there's going to be any issues with the with their missile capability, which was a big issue, whether it's going to be with their proxies. But a big part, just like you said, was the money. And if you remember last time with the JCPOA, there was a lot of issue, including from President Trump, on the money that was paid to the Iranians following that agreement. And so here we are again, talking about lifting sanctions, talking about reconstruction, talking about allowing them to ship oil, when all of that was off the table prior to this war and the straits were open. So now we're getting back to that point. I don't think you're going to see any kind of reconstruction finances coming out of the U.S. on this deal. I think that's something you're hearing from the Iranian side, which is, you know, they're going to tout the things that they want to see in this agreement a week from now or whatever, 5 days from now, and then 60 days from now. And then the U.S. is going to say, here's what we see in this agreement. And both are going to call it a victory, which I don't really think it's a victory for either. But that money is going to be a big one. You won't see reconstruction funds, I'm convinced. You will see sanctions lifted, and you will see some other financial piece of it, not quite the same as the JCPOA, but pretty darn similar when it comes down to it.
Let me ask you about collateral winners and collateral losers. And I wonder if the European Union becomes a collateral winner in this deal.
They do in a way. The collateral losers is easier, and that is in the Gulf, right? We've got all those Gulf nations that produce oil, and they're the collateral losers. You know, we're talking about the straits being open. Of course, we're not going to see a lot of traffic flow through the straits right away. We are going to see oil prices come down. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we're going to see gas prices come down, but they got to demine the straits. And, you know, the pundits are saying, hey, how come it's not open right away? This is a lot. No, it's not. They got to take the time to make sure the mines lines are all out of there, that traffic can flow freely, and that the companies that own those big oil tankers are good with them going, you know, going through the strait. So the collateral losers are definitely those Gulf countries that have been hit, have to reopen refineries, are now going to be under threat. You know, just because we have this agreement doesn't mean that they're going to be less threatened, hopefully. The collateral winners, yeah, I think Europe stood up to the U.S. in this entire revolution. Trump asked for help from them early on. They said, yeah, we'll think about it. I think you'll see some them stepping up now, but that's not in fighting the war. That's not in support of a war. That's in support of opening the strait so they can see oil go through, which ultimately helps their constituents. So I think the European Union, every time we make a choice like this, whether we pull away from Ukraine, whether we go into Iran and they don't support us and they stand up, they become stronger. And you know, at the end of the day, I think that's going to be one of the points of history, that the European Union and the NATO countries, specifically the European countries, this is where you saw them become stronger, more responsible for their own defense, and that the U.S. didn't have to support them like they have in the past. And I think that's a good thing.
Give me just 20 seconds. Russia, China, collateral winners, collateral losers.
China, collateral winner. They're going. They're getting their oil. They survived fine. Russia, collateral loser. Iran is one of their inner circle. They did nothing to support them. Russia is weaker. Yeah, we let them sell some oil so that they could go back to Ukraine. Right now, they're losing in Ukraine. All around, Russia is going to be a collateral loser. They're weakening every day, and maybe that's something we should talk about next time, as Ukraine is still out there.
Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington, your home sold guaranteed realty. Find out how much your home is worth instantly at laughlinwolfingtonrealty.com.